You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to show number 318. Today's Sunday, October 4th, 2015, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by both Hammy and Kurt tonight, and guys, happy end of the regular season.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
And happy birthday, Steve.
Happy birthday, Steve.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.
62 never looked so good.
I know.
Isn't it true, though? My God, I have all my hair and stuff. All right, so guys, in tonight, sorry, Ham, that was a low blow.
It was. For you that don't know, Ham is bald.
Yeah, thank you.
So guys, in tonight's show, we'll give grades to the rookies, we'll discuss Copy's promotion, Hayward's success, and we'll name the MVP and LVP for the year on the Braves. But first, guys, a shout out to Shelby Miller and the end of the bench, both dominating the Cardinals today, getting the win for Shelby. You know, it doesn't really matter, right? But I'm so glad that this is not going to be a story heading into spring training and about his first start. I mean, like, don't you think it's great that this has just sort of, you know, been put to bed now?
Oh, absolutely. It would have been such a long winter. And for Shelby as well, right? Of just, you know, at least he can just put an end to it, know it was a bad season, know that he was snake bit. But to end it, you know, three hits against his old team in the offseason, it's just it feels good for everybody. And we need him. I mean, we have four quality players on our team, right? Freeman, Simmons, Tehran, and Shelby. We cannot afford for him to, you know, have
be in his head. Yeah.
Be in his head and all that stuff and just come out flat next year. So it was so necessary.
And interesting that really it was the end of the bench, guys. I mean, there was nobody in that lineup today. And yet they put up six runs. Pretty great.
Against the Pawtucket Cardinals.
Yeah. Well, to be fair. But we'll take it.
Absolutely. No, it was great. I mean, I don't know if you guys watched the I happened to be at the stadium today, so I don't know if it was on TV, but the congratulations line at the end of the game. I mean, everybody hugged Shelby. It was very cool.
Yeah.
All right, guys, as we look to next year, let's give out year-end grades for the rookie class from this year. We're not going to hit everybody. We're going to ignore some of the Marksberries in the
F.
You know, yeah.
F Marksberry.
In the bullpen. But we'll try to hit the main guys. So we'll sort of take turns on this. So, Ham, why don't you start with Whistler? What grade do you give him?
Well, it's been an interesting season for Whistler. I mean, he's pitched really well at home. He had a 3.4 ERA. He struggled on the road, 6.75. And he sort of started strong in June and July, really struggled in August. But then in September, he has really become he's looked dominant. You see the dominant starter in him. He's allowed, two earned or less in three out of his last four starts. He's had a 3.3 ERA. I think that, you know, the start against the Nats earlier this week where he went seven innings and gave up one run is something that we should be expecting a lot of.
And almost a complete game shutout today.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that, and again, against the Pawtucket Cardinals. But I think that, for a rookie call-up season, I'm going to give him an A-. I think that I know he only went 7-8. He did struggle, bad month here and there, struggled on the road. But the way he pulled it together near the end, and it wasn't like we needed him. It wasn't like the season hung on him being good. But I think he kept his composure. He quickly learned stuff that he needed to and it showed off. And I think he had a great first campaign. I cannot wait for him for next year.
I agree. Yeah, I had a B+ for Whistler. I'm with you. Curtis, anything different there?
No, I'm same grade as you. He had that little stretch where he looked incredibly hittable, but the back end of the season here, his last few starts have been so encouraging and so exciting. All of them. I mean, they're across the board. I know we'll talk about a bunch of these guys, but just the pitching over the last couple of weeks has been remarkable.
Yeah, 2.33 ERA over his last five starts. All right, Curtis, let's move on to Folty. What grade do you give Folty?
Speaking of not remarkable, I gave him a C-, and honestly, it's he was so up and down. And when he was here, it really was not all that great. And obviously he's had the health issues recently, which impact his future going forward and his season obviously here. But you know, he really didn't pitch all that great. He had a couple of starts. He had a start back on in May against Milwaukee, which I remember us talking about, that we were all so excited about, where he looked overpowering, only gave up 2 earned runs and had 8 Ks in that game. But he never really made it past the 6th. He only pitched past the 6th in 3 of his starts. And then he got sent down, of course, to Gwinnett, where he was not that great. I mean, he had almost as many walks as he did strikeouts in Gwinnett. So then they brought him back up. He had a really nice start against Baltimore. He got a loss, but he only gave up 2 earned runs. But his last few starts, it was 6 earned runs. Then he had a 2 earned run, which wasn't bad, but 6, 7, and then 4, which was 0 earned runs, but, I mean, still 4 earned runs. And, you know, I mean, they were losing pretty much every time he went out there. So he needs to work on some things. He needs to kind of develop some more pitches and get some movement on his fastball, which is electrifying, but it's a little too straight. So I gave him a C-. Hopefully there's more to come, and hopefully these blood clots are not a long-term issue.
Yeah. They removed part of his rib to reduce some of the pressure. So that has to, yeah, really weird. Yeah, Kardashian, I gave him a C- exactly as well. You see the potential, didn't really do it in any sort of consistent way, but he does have an electric arm. So, yeah, I'm with you on the C-. Hammy?
Yeah, ditto.
All right, we'll move on to Williams Perez, and I'll take him. So, remember he had that, he came in relief. His first appearance this year was against the Nationals early in the year, and he got crushed. He gave up like 7 runs. It was awful. And then all of a sudden he's a starter. But his the 10 appearances that followed that relief appearance, he had a 2.17 ERA. And then he got injured. He came back, was pretty awful. I remember we did the show, I don't know, 6 weeks ago, where we were like, nah, Perez is done. He's never going to see the light of day in Atlanta again.
Two of the three of us.
Okay, yeah, that was mostly me. Okay. 2.35 ERA in his last 5 starts. I give Williams Perez a solid B. I mean, I think he's really going to be part of the conversation for that back end of the rotation next year.
Yeah.
Curtis, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I was with you when we were kind of thinking that he was done. He was the guy that came from nowhere, and we figured he had had his moment in the sun, and then he would just fade off into Nowheresville. But yeah, I mean, it's been great to see him bounce back at the end of the year. Ham, all praise to you for seeing through the fog.
A plus for Perez. No, I think he's a B too. Because, I mean, we can't ignore that stretch. He was pretty awful during that stretch.
But here's the thing with these guys, you know, it's going to be uneven. It's their rookie year. For it to be just dominant from the get-go, you know, you rarely get that. But to see these guys have early success, you know, the league makes adjustments, but then they make adjustments to have such successful final months of the year. I feel much different about the pitching at the end of September than I did in the beginning of September. Speaking of Hammy, out of nowhere, Ryan Weber, what do you think about him?
I like him. I mean, he showed a lot of promise. Obviously we only got to see him for 5 starts, and, you know, he's got some good stuff. A lot of movement. I think he's still got some control issues, but you know, he had a couple quality starts. Just like he too had a great start against the Nats this week. It was a tough loss, but a great game from him. For him, you really have to look at Gwinnett. And he was fantastic in Gwinnett, one of the best pitchers. I mean, 6-3 with a 2.37 ERA. Just 34 strikeouts, only 8 walks. The guy can pitch, right? So, I mean, if you want to grade him on his time up here, I have to give him a B because he was 0-3 with a 4.76. But it doesn't mean I'm not excited about what lies ahead for Ryan Weber.
Yeah, you know, he had that one awful start against the Marlins, sandwiched in the middle of really good ones, where he gave up like 7 runs in
7,
2 innings.
Yeah.
But if you remove that, the other 4 starts, his ERA is 2.76. So not that many data points, but I'm with you. I give him a B as well. Curtis, anything else there?
No, that sounds about in tune where I am.
But it's amazing that he'll be part of the conversation too, and he'll have to be next year. I mean, he, you know, he looked real good.
Or and he really came out of nowhere.
Or he'll be in Kansas City next year.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
St. Louis.
Oh, God. All right, Curtis, how about Manny Banuelos?
Manny Banuelos gets an incomplete. We saw great promise from him from his first starts. It's kind of a theme with a lot of these guys. He looked great in his first four starts, but then he got hurt, and then they brought him back, and he did not pitch quite as well, and then he was gone. He's got bone spurs in his elbow, which you hope that's something that is not very serious. Those sometimes develop, and so you hope they just shave them off, and he's back and ready to pitch like he did in those first four starts where he looks so great. But I can't really give him a grade because I don't know that we ever really got enough out of him to really know what we have.
Yeah, I mean, I gave him a C only because he showed some real promise. He had a couple of great, great starts. So I think there's something there. You know, to me, short of him having this unbelievable spring for the Braves in 2016, he's not going to be in the starting rotation. He will be, you know, he'll start in Gwinnett and maybe become something good. But, you know, he showed some flashes this year for sure.
Yeah, and I just anything? Well, just that there's some guys that I'm really sort of pinning my hopes on for the future, like the guys we've talked about, Whistler and Weber and Perez even. I'm not for Banuelos, even though he's got talent and stuff. There's just too many question marks around him. I've not seen enough. I think he would be gravy, but he's not one of the guys I'm really counting on for the future.
Counting on him. Yeah. Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is crazy because those first four starts, he only gave up 6 earned runs through four starts.
Yeah, he looked great.
And highly touted, too. I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he was the next big thing in the Yankee organization. Yeah. All right. So moving on to Aroldis Vizcaíno. So in, you know, his appearances here, 33 innings, 3 strikeouts per walk, 1 home run over that 33 innings, 1.64 ERA, 2.37 FIP. I give Vizcaíno a B+. I mean, he will be the closer at the start of the year next year, and I feel pretty good about it. Ma'am?
Yeah, I think you're not being fair. For me, he got an A- as well. I wish he'd been here longer, but what more can you ask of him? Like, what would he have been able to do to get an A from you? Just no runs? Steve, you...
Yeah, yeah, that
driver.
One home run.
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
Okay. But I agree. I'm very excited. We were excited about him a long time ago, and I don't think we were seeing him as a starter. It's refreshing to see him back and healthy. And productive as a closer, it's great.
Yeah. All right, Curtis, anything on Vizcaíno?
Well, it's just you think that we really didn't have to give up anything to get him back. I mean, wasn't it just Tommy La Stella that we...
I think it was the Tommy La Stella deal, that's right.
That's pretty amazing. If this ends up being the closer that we have for a few years for the price of Tommy La Stella, that's not a bad move.
What did we get for him the first time? Do you guys remember?
Yeah, it was that, it was what's-his-face. We traded to the Yankees, the pitcher, the starting pitcher.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was at the end of his career, and he had a career year here. I can't think of his name. I'll think
Javi
of it.
Javi Vasquez?
Yes, Javi Vasquez, that's right.
You loved Javi Vasquez.
I did. Well, what was not to love that year?
That's true. To be fair, that's true.
All right, Hammy, what do you got on Jace Peterson?
This was the toughest one because, I mean, I really wanted to give Jace a good grade. And if we had graded him at the All-Star break, he would have been a high B for me. I mean, at the All-Star break, his slash line was 252, 328, 348. Which stood out even more because of his youth and the fact that the rest of the offense was struggling so much. And he had those, you know, great May, great June. So he was awesome. And I really loved him. He was one of my favorite Braves early on. And then he just sort of – the wheels fell off. Over the second half, he hit 221, 295, 320. You know, he came in sort of known as a speedster. His stolen bases dropped off. His walks were down. He was just bad. And, I mean, he had that horrible – July, and so and then, you know, started to do somewhat better since that July, but he was just bad. And I had high hopes of him being sort of an anchor of the infield, and I think his ceiling now is like a Mark DeRosa, a good utility player, right? And I read somewhere that if Peterson's put on a bad team, he's going to get more plate appearances than he needs, and he's going to get exposed. And I think that's what happened to him. So I like him so much, though, and he you know, when he was good, the Braves were good, and we were in it up till the break, as we talked about. And so I'm going to give him a B minus. I feel like that's a little. It could just as easily be a C plus for me, but I'm going to give him a B minus.
Yeah, I went C plus on him. I mean, other than the low batting average and mediocre on base and slugging, he was really good.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Exactly. Other than everything he did on offense.
And he was serviceable in the field. You know, I mean, he made some nice plays. He booted some stuff throughout the course of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, he showed potential. I mean, to me, that's why he got a C+. I mean, his slash line is bad.
It is.
It's bad.
I mean, it's a tale of two seasons. But he won some games for us, right? I mean, he definitely won some games for us.
Yeah, early on.
Sure.
Curtis, anything different there?
It truly was the best of times and the worst of times for Jace Peterson. I gave him a flat C. Yeah, I mean, Ham, as much as we want him to perhaps be a bench player, I think that he's going to be much more prominent in this
future lineup. I'm not saying – so. I agree.
We really need him to be much better than he was in the second half of this year.
Although I do think the front office is toying with – you know, that Daniel Castro looked pretty good these last 2 weeks. Maybe we're not stuck with Peterson at second. Believe me, those thoughts are happening.
Absolutely.
Speaking of potential for getting exposed.
Well, yes. All right, Curtis, we will end with Christian Bethencourt. What do you got?
I gave him a D, and I feel that's almost
too high.
Yeah, that's almost like I'm just trying to pass him. It was just really bad. You look at the Gwinnett numbers and you think, wow, this guy is what we think he's going to be. 327, 359, 480 slash line. Atlanta, not so much. 200, 225, 290. We had the 8 pass balls. He's supposed to be known for his cannon arm. He barely threw out 50% of the base runners that ran against him.
And inaccurate throws to second on steal attempts, too. A lot of stuff to the third base side of the bag. Simmons would have to sort of whip his arm around to get guys. Like, yeah, his strength, the arm, which was supposed to be such a strength, did not show itself as much as I thought it would.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously this is going to have to be rectified. And this is another position that they're going to have to fill, because Bethencourt is clearly not the guy that's going to be a solution at a really important position, and especially with all these young pitchers and everything else, he's just not the guy that can man that position for this team.
Ham, what do you think about Bethencourt?
I'm going to say more about this later, but yeah, F. We needed him. I mean, I think. Well, I'll save it for later.
Yeah, no, but I agree. I think maybe a point you're going to make is it's an F and not a D for me because of what he was supposed to be and the implications for him not being it. Mm-hmm. He created such a void where we didn't think we would have one. You know, AJ Pierzynski is going to live like 2 less years because of Christian Bethencourt, because of what AJ had to go through this year. All right, guys, let's move on to fair or foul, where I throw something out there. You agree with it fair or disagree with it foul? So the Braves promoted John Coppolella from assistant GM to GM this week. Ham, fair or foul, you are happy with this move?
Fairish? Flow? Flair? I don't even know how to say that. I don't think we'll really see a difference. I think Hart is still going to be very much helping to call the shots. I think Coppy is still going to have the same amount of influence as he had in the past. So I don't know what the difference will be. So okay, sure.
The difference is that Coppy won't get hired by another team because we wouldn't promote him. You know, I mean, seriously, that's part of this.
Yeah.
Teams were starting to call, and they had to give him a plum gig, or he was going to leave.
Yeah. And if, I mean, I think, and this is maybe for a show down the line when we reflect more about this season, I want to see more now. I'm impatient with the rebuilding process. So I think early on, I felt very happy to have Copy on the team, and I felt like it was sort of a, we've got him and other teams don't. He's going to be that sort of perfect hybrid between the stats guys and then the old school baseball guys. And I mean, maybe he's not had enough opportunity to show that this year, but I'm less excited that we have to keep him. I'm fine with Copy. But this season, as opposed to where we were at the beginning of the season, I'm less like we've got to keep him no matter what. But still, I have to give the benefit of the doubt. I know these things just don't turn around overnight. So, okay, fine.
All right, Curtis, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, I was a little discouraged that they came out and they were like, yeah, we're promoting him, but it really makes no difference because we're not really changing the structure of the way we're going to do things and blah, 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 blah. So, like you said, they're really just changing his titles and maybe giving him more money so he won't go and become the next GM of insert team here. And to Pam's point, I don't know what... I mean, I don't doubt that he's obviously had an integral part in all these moves, but I would like to maybe see more of, and maybe we have seen, I have no idea, but I mean, I just want him more. I'm tired of seeing John Schuerholz and John Hart as the face of this team, I guess is really the point I'm trying to get to. And I want to see a kind of a new generational approach to it. And I'm hoping that he can bring that. And I'm hoping that they give him the opportunity to put more of his stamp on this team. And again, maybe he already has, but I like the idea of a young guy being more in control.
Yeah. You know, Mark Bradley had a column about the move, and he seemed to believe based on, I don't know what, but that Copy was more than 50% responsible for the moves that happened this, you know, last off season and this year, that he was really been a significant architect in this rebuilding. So, you know, we may already be seeing Copy's stamp on all this. And we talked about the moves we didn't like last week. And beyond the Oliveira one, which, of course, we still have to see play out, I was really in favor of all the moves that they did. I mean, I think that it was very bold and very fast, and it, you know, it moved things along, and hopefully it works out. But I'm happy with Copy. You know, it's funny, Kurt, you want to see less of the two Johns. One problem is, I don't know if you guys listened to Copy's the press conference where they announced him or saw him in the TV booth this week. Copy is a terrible speaker. Yes. I mean, like, dreadful.
It was awful. Yeah.
It's embarrassing. I mean, he was a little better in the booth than when he was making, you know, planned remarks at the press conference. But dear God, he must be, you know, much, much better on a cell phone talking to other GMs than he is on camera, because yeesh.
Yeah.
I mean, they may just have to keep the two Johns as the face of the franchise because Copy ain't up to it. Yeah.
Well, it's so different. Is it like the two tanned guys with their, you know, shirts unbuttoned, all relaxed, and then Coppola comes in there and he looks like he lives in a closet somewhere without an iron.
Yeah, yeah. And very bad posture.
Yeah.
All right, Curtis, fair or foul, blame should be placed on the Braves for not getting the best out of Hayward offensively after what we've seen him do this year in St. Louis.
Yeah, absolutely. I was reading an article and they pointed out something about how the Cardinals have really cut down on Hayward swinging at inside pitches, which doesn't seem like that would be such a dramatic decision to make, considering that he has trouble swinging at inside pitches, but they've gotten him to lay off at inside pitches. He swung at a lot of them last year and missed a lot of them last year. He's not swinging at nearly as many this year, and the rate of him hitting them is much higher. So it's kind of what we all feared was going to happen, was that the second Hayward left, and he started slow, and so
yeah, bad April.
But yeah, the fear was that obviously that he would leave and really become a full component player, and that we would really just have to sit back and watch him blossom into a Hall of Famer playing in somebody else's uniform. And I still think that can happen. There was a Fangraphs thing, which calculates basically what a team could based on contributions what a team could get on the open market. And in Hayward's case for this year, that total is $47.6 million. Hmm. Now, that's probably a really stupid number, but...
Wait, for the year?
Yeah. Open market. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Markakis, in comparison, is $11.5 million, which is basically what we just paid him.
Think about the bargain we're
getting. Yes. But yeah, I think that a lot has to do. And I mean, there was circumstances, his injuries, obviously, that they had no control over. But they really didn't have a lineup. They kept forcing him into the leadoff spot, which he never really seemed comfortable with. Maybe it was the pressure of playing for his hometown team and everything else, but you wish it could have happened here.
Hammy, yeah. What do you think?
I mean, I'm right there with Curtis. And, you know, I mean, we always talk about what does a hitting coach do? You know, and do you really see a difference in a hitting coach? And I mean, I think, Curtis, just to put some numbers behind what you said, you know, and he went from swinging at 47% of inside pitches, right, sort of inner third of the plate or off, in 2013 to 32% in 2015, which is 125 fewer swings. So he was taking 125 less valuable swings. Fewer valuable swings. I mean, he had 39 hits against inside pitches this year, and he had 36 last season, but he swung at 39 or more of them. So, I mean, it's just – and those are the numbers that make a difference, right? I mean, baseball is a game of inches here and there in small numbers. So, I mean, that is a hitting coach getting through to Jason, stop swinging at that. I don't think that's something he did himself. So I think that's all on the Cardinals and all on the Braves for not, you know, not having the right coach, maybe not having the right mentality – you know, throughout the organization about how you approach the plate. But he, I think this was not just a change of scenery thing. I think they made him better. I mean, he's on the verge of finishing with the highest batting average, 292, which if he had hit 292 in Atlanta, can you imagine that? Right? Second highest on base.
Do they let him go if he hits 292 in Atlanta?
Yeah, probably. I mean, he's a 6 war, right? And Markakis is a 1.9. Our highest guy this year was Freddie at 3.2. So, I mean, this hurts. This hurts. And I want to take back when I said the trade I would have taken back was the Bourne Swisher trade. But anyway, his second highest on base percentage of his 6-year career. If you take away his bad April, he's hitting over 300 for the year. And, you know, his homers are down, but I think that's because the Cardinals found out who he is as a player. Maybe he's not that guy who's denting cars in spring training. And he's a force. He's going to be the best right fielder in baseball. And it hurts.
Yeah, so war-wise, this year was really similar to his rookie season. Higher batting average this year. His slugging was higher in 2010 because he hit more home runs. So does that mean, you know, he came in with all the natural talent in the world and slowly, after it shined through in his rookie year, the Braves, you know, sort of ruined it? I don't know. You know, I look back at that 2013 stretch where the Braves, you know, won 21 of 23. They had just moved him to the top of the lineup, and he had never looked better, you know? I mean, it was probably the best stretch.
Right before he broke his jaw.
Right before he broke his jaw, and then he was never the same. And then last year was just clearly an ugly year in the clubhouse and on the field and, you know. So I don't know that it's that cut and dry. I mean, like, I have trouble believing that the Braves hitting coaches weren't telling him to lay off inside pitches, but that in some way the message got through to him this year in a way that it wouldn't get through to him when he was here in Atlanta. And, Kurt, I think the playing for your hometown team is part of the equation, and getting moved around, you know, in the lineup is part of the equation, and feeling too much pressure is part of the equation. I mean, you look around in St. Louis and the expectation to win and all the talent around you, a more talented team, obviously, than the Braves. And, you know, that has got to take pressure off you, and I'm just going to do my thing. So I'll go foul on this. I don't know that it's really the Braves' fault. I think it's a lot of circumstance sort of led to this. And had he stayed here this year, he probably wouldn't have been the player that we saw in St. Louis. And I still think the money he's going to get on the open market, he's going to get 16, 17, 18 a year this offseason, and the Braves would and could not have done that.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what he does in the postseason.
Yeah, I
the true market fee is different because he's not been a good postseason player.
I don't remember those numbers. Did you look at some of that?
No, and I don't have him in front of me, but I did. And I mean, and there's a, the line on him right now in some of the press is this postseason will go a long way to the contract that he gets next year.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So before we get to the final shot in the dark of the season and getting back to the 2015 Braves team, let's name our MVP and LVP of the season for the Braves. So, Hammy, who's your MVP this year?
Well, my MVP is the only player on the team other than Phil Gosselin, who actually hit over 300. And it's AJ Pierzynski. And that's not the reason that he's my MVP, but it's an interesting stat that Markakis was right there. But Gosselin actually had the highest batting average of any Brave.
Well, he also had like six at-bats, though.
25, yeah. I know. Hey, that's not
so bad.
But it also, there were other guys who had much fewer, and we were just abysmal. I mean, it was actually pretty easy to pick an MVP. The LVP was a harder decision. You know, he played in 113 games. We talked about this a lot, which I think is probably twice as many as we thought he might play.
Right. He should have played a third of the season, basically.
He should have. And I think the other thing that we alluded to is how well the young pitchers have sort of come into their own down the stretch. And I think we have to give some of that credit to AJ, right? You're a young guy coming in. There's a lot to get used to. And I think he handled them all very well. And the fact that they were able to build on stuff and to improve. I mean, obviously, McDowell has most of the credit there. But you need a good guy behind the plate. And I think that's on AJ. I think we all thought he was coming in as sort of the counterpoint to Johnny Gomes, right? A Johnny Gomes type player, clubhouse presence. We've talked about all this, right? And he was our most reliable, most valuable player when it was all said and done. And without him, we are easily the worst team in baseball this year. So he's our most valuable player by far.
Yeah, the numbers, right? He was second in slugging, OPS, and offensive war to Freddie. But Hammy, to add to what you said, the fact that he became like the heart and soul of the team, that puts him over the top to me. That ain't Freddie. And I'm not saying Freddie has to be that, whatever. This isn't about AJ versus Freddie. But for him to have added that element to all of it, yeah, he's my MVP as well. Curtis, how about you?
Yeah, he's my MVP as well. Second highest batting average of any catcher in Major League Baseball behind Buster Posey.
Fifth highest
OPS tied with McCann at 765. He had the 9-game hitting streak. He's batted 340 since July 5th, which is the best of any Major League catcher. And honestly, Freddie Gonzalez had a great line, which they were like, well, what do you think about having AJ net back next year? He's like, there are 30 teams that are going to want to have AJ Pierzynski on their team next year, which is totally true. And we might get David Ross out of AJ Pierzynski. And I blame Christian Betancourt for that too, because he sucked so bad that Pierzynski played a lot. Now he's going to be gone because he showed that he's still got so much left in the tank. Yeah, you hope some of it wore off. We all hope that it would wear off in Betancourt, that he would take a lot of this. But, you know, the attitude that we were all worried about when he came in here, that he would be a trouble. I mean, we never saw any of that. I mean, he became one of my favorite players on this team. And I think that's what a lot of people said. It's like you hate him as a competitor, but as a teammate, there's nobody better. And I think we saw that play out this year. I mean, he's been invaluable to this team.
All right, Curtis, sticking with you, who is your LVP for this year?
I'm going to go kind of left field as shown this, and not actually to left field, but to third base, a guy that's not even actually on the Braves anymore, but it's Chris Johnson, a guy that was so terrible and so terrible all year long for us, so bad that we had to take on two lousy contracts just to get rid of him. And I know the details obviously kind of play out evenly, but just a guy that, had signed that big contract a couple of years ago, and really there was no other team in the world that would have given him that contract other than the Frank Wren-led Braves. And we were stuck with him. We finally got rid of him, but, you know, he's always been kind of a hothead, but he was kind of a whiner this year too, and wanted to play more for whatever reason. He was just awful when he was here, and it's good that he's gone, but, just a lot of problems that arose out of a lot of these bad contracts that were given out. And since we've kind of moved on from a lot of them, he was the last one standing, and I'm happy they finally got rid of him, but he is my LVP for the season.
Hi, Hammy. How about you?
Well, Stevie, you mentioned the reasons why I'm giving this guy my LVP vote. He only played 48 games for us this season, but it was Christian Betancourt. And, you know, relation to expectations, he provided the least value to the team. This was the season he was supposed to take the reins, and he didn't. And we've already talked about just how bad he's been. Kurt, you mentioned his horrible stats. And there were a lot of guys who were not valuable on this team, but Betancourt was the worst, and we needed the most out of him. And we got nothing. So he's my LVP.
Yeah, we needed him to be cheap for the next few years and have the catcher's position settled. Now they're going to have to go out and spend, you know, the finite amount of the $30 million that they have to spend next year on a catcher. At least I hope they do.
And we won't even get a good one, right? I mean, we'll get sort of a middling one.
Or if you go and try and get Luke Roy, think of how much you're going to have to trade the Brewers to pry Luke Roy away from them.
Right, or Weeters, and you're going to be worried about his health the whole time. And
they're not paying. I can't imagine. I mean, and these guys, those are short-term, because if Luke Roy keeps doing what he does, once he gets to where he's a free agent, you'll have to, I mean, that salary will go through the roof. So
Yeah. Well, so I guess I don't have to say it, but Betancourt was my LVP as well. All right, guys, let's talk shot in the dark. We don't have a prediction for the coming week because the regular season is over, but let's look back on what we did last week. So we'll start with our listener pick for Shot in the Dark. It was from Twitter follower Nate Roke, and he predicted that the three of us would all get our shots in the dark right this week. So let's see how we did. Kurt, you predicted that Shelby wouldn't win this week.
Boo.
That's a good start.
Yeah, you're not off to a good start, Nate. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ham, you predicted that Oliveira would hit two home runs and two doubles. I predicted that Oliveira would hit a grand slam. He had one double this week.
I meant to say he would get hit in the elbow and then not play again.
Yeah. Our listener meant to say none of us would get our.
Yes, exactly.
Right, exactly.
Did you see there was somebody retweeted? Somebody predicted that Shelby would pitch a complete game shutout against the Cardinals. And what did he go? Eight innings?
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, he went eight innings.
Three hits.
All right. So none of us get it this month. This week. So Ham and Kurt, you guys remain tied. You share the honors for the month of September. So look, we don't have a shot in the dark for next week, obviously, but we will we'll predict off-season shots in the dark, and we'll ask folks to send those in as well. So what is your shot in the dark for the Braves off-season? Send them in this week, and we'll pick a few, and we will, you know, we'll track them and talk about them next year. So, Curtis, what is your off-season shot in the dark?
Well, I originally wanted to say that Freddie would get fired.
But it's so not happening.
It's so not happening.
Yeah. So I'm going to predict, now that Dan Uggla's contract is finally off our tally, that the Braves go out and spend actually less money on all the free agents that they bring in this offseason than they did on Dan Uggla in 2015.
Now, Uggla's contract this year was, what, 15?
I don't even know that it was that high. But yeah, okay. Sure. Whatever.
13 or 14. It may have been 13. Yeah, it may have been 13. Gosh, I hope you're wrong about that, Kurt.
Me too.
All right, Ham, what do you got?
Mine is sort of along the lines of Curtis, but mine's more about the quality than the cost. I think the Braves will not sign anyone who had a 2015 WAR higher than 2 in the offseason.
So why do you think that? Like, they just can't afford a free agent who has a WAR over 2, or they're just not going to be able to – they're not going to want to trade pieces to get someone that good? Like, what is your –
Yeah, yeah. I think that there's not anybody who's going to want to play here. And I hope they don't. I hope they wait. I hope that they don't waste a season on a person. I don't think there's any huge, great free agents out there they should be going after. And I just don't think they will. I don't think I don't think they'll get them.
Well, a lot of talk this week. That there was a lot of interviews with Coppola's interview, with Hart and Schuerholz's interview, and they all really talked. They didn't really talk – I mean, granted, they'll keep it close to the vest like they always have, but I mean, really, they focused a lot on just bringing in some pieces for the bullpen.
For the bullpen, yeah.
And then maybe a veteran pitcher that would be like a 4 or a 5. I mean, it never really – they didn't say we're going to go crazy. And to Ham's point – it's going to be a really tough sell to try and bring anybody in here. I mean, not only are you going to be in a lame duck stadium where the attendance is probably going to be terrible, but your team's probably not going to be all that good. So I don't know how you sell that. Go ahead, Stephen. I have a question for you both after you get through with your shot in the dark, Steve.
All right. So mine is that all three, Maben, Bourne, and Swisher, will be gone before opening day next year. Curtis, what's your question?
We call that Morsher.
I'm sorry?
He calls it, not we.
Oh, Maben, Bourne, and Swisher. Okay, right, yeah. Moisher will leave. Okay. What do you got, Kurt?
How many games do you think the Braves win next year?
So what did we end up with
this? What did we win this year? Yeah, I was just thinking that.
I don't even know. I can look real quick.
We won 63? 64?
No, it's more than – I thought it was like 67.
The Braves – okay, I'm going to standings here. This is very interesting.
Gripping radio.
We won 67 games.
Oh, nice.
We will win 79 games next year.
Oh, you're crazy.
Dude, if we have a real bullpen, that's 7 or 8 games right there. I mean, seriously. The bullpen was a joke most of the season.
I bet we win 72 games.
Yeah, that's where I was. 72, 73, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Oh, we're going to be five. We're going to be more than five better. You guys are crazy. Mm. All right. So, guys, let's close out with this. Postseason is upon us. Let's do some predictions. So let's predict who will meet in both league championships and then who wins it all in the World Series. So, Hammy, what do you got?
So I have this is a little more hoping than maybe guessing, but I have the Royals over the Blue Jays in the and I have the Yankees beating the Astros for the play-in game, unfortunately.
You are a monster, Hammy. Go on.
But I'm not a monster here. I have the Cubs beating the Pirates and then the Cardinals to meet the Mets, who will dispatch of the Dodgers. So it'll be Cubs, Mets, and the Cubs will win to go to the World Series and have their hopes just crushed in 7 games by the Royals. So Royals over Cubs in 7 in the World Series.
Okay. As riveting as Hammy's predictions about the play-in game were, Kurt, you can go straight to the league championship if you want.
I haven't been paying attention to baseball in like a month. So, Royals over Jays, Cards over Dodgers. There's no way. This is like picking number one seeds across the board, and Cards over Royals for the worst repeat. Cards winning another World Championship, 6 games. In a Missouri showdown.
All right, I'm going Cubs over Dodgers, Jays over Royals, and the Jays beat the Cubs in the World Series. Don't sleep on the Jays.
Mm. Don't sleep on David Price. He's a monster.
Indeed.
He's great lately. And Kurt, the Giants won last year, so the Cards can't repeat.
I didn't say repeat.
Well, I think you did.
I think you did use that word, but that's fine.
Well, whatever. In a repeat of the teams I really don't want winning World
that's
Championship.
That's what you
there
meant.
There you
yes.
go. The streak
between,
the run continues.
Between
the
those two.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know the networks are just praying the Cardinals aren't in it again. And you know what I mean? Like in the World Series. Like, they don't want to see the Cardinals again in the World Series.
Do you think they're rooting for the Blue Jays?
Dodgers.
Dodgers.
Dodgers, Yankees. Dodgers, Yankees, all
yeah.
the way.
Yeah.
And Dodgers, Mets in the – oh, no, they played in the first round. See, I told you I wasn't paying attention to the baseball.
All right, so, folks, we will be back next week, hopefully with a Atlanta Braves beat writer. And so next Sunday night, we will post another show. And that is tonight's show. Everyone, please make sure you have us in your RSS feeds or subscriptions on iTunes or Stitcher so that you don't miss any of our weekly shows. And as always, check us out at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com for past shows, to check out our blogs, and to post in our comment section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.